This episode is sponsored by Transcend, a veteran-owned and operated performance optimization company that I introduced recently as a sponsor on this show. Well, since then, I have actually been using my products and I've had incredible success. There was initial blood work that was extremely detailed, and based on that, they offered supplementation. So I began taking DHEA, BPC-157 for inflammation, based on the fact that I've been a stuntman, a martial artist, and a firefighter my whole life, lots of aches and pains. Dihexa to help cognition after multiple punches to the head and shift work, and peptides. 4 months later, they did a detailed blood work again, and I was actually able to taper off two of the peptides because my body had responded so well to just one of them that it was optimized at that point. So I cannot speak highly enough of the immense range of supplementation that they offer, whether it's male health, female health, peptides to boost your own testosterone, which I would argue is needed by a lot of the fire service, or whether it's exogenous testosterone needed, especially after TBIs or advanced age. Now, as I mentioned before, the other side of this company is an altruistic arm called the Transcend Foundation, which is putting veterans and first responders through some of their protocols free of charge. Now, Transcend are also offering you, the audience, 10% off their protocols, and you can find that on jamesgearing.com under the products tab. And if you want to hear more about Transcend and their story, listen to episode 808 with the founder, Ernie Colling, or go to transcendcompany.com. Welcome to the Behind the Shield podcast. As always, my name is James Gearing, and this week it is my absolute honor to welcome on the show strength and conditioning coach Melissa Mercado. So in this conversation, we discuss a host of topics, from her journey into the world of coaching, training Marines, the Wounded Warrior Battalion, recruitment standards, programming, nutrition, wearables, and the innovative programming app Team Builder. Now, before we get to this incredible conversation, as I say every week, please just take a moment. Go to whichever app you listen to this on, subscribe to the show, leave feedback, and leave a rating. Every single 5-star rating truly does elevate this podcast, therefore making it easier for others to find. And this is a free library of well over 1,000 episodes now. So all I ask in return is that you help share these incredible men and women's stories so I can get them to every single person on planet Earth who needs to hear them. So with that being said, I introduce to you Melissa Mercado. Enjoy. Well, Melissa, I want to start by saying thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the Behind the Shield podcast today.
I am beyond excited to be here. You have no idea. This is my first podcast, so I was freaking out, and I'm just so excited for our conversation. So thank you for having me.
Me too. It's going to be brilliant. All right. Well, then, very first question, where on planet Earth are we finding you this afternoon?
I am currently in Tampa, Florida. You would think it's really hot here, but it is freezing today. It's like 41 degrees. I don't know what's going on. So that's where I'm currently located.
I'm in Ocala, so I'm just over an hour away from you, and that's why I'm wearing a hoodie.
Me too. I haven't even been outside today. I just know it's really cold.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. That's the thing about Florida, though. I mean, it's cold, but there's still blue skies and sunshine. So I think it just... Back home in England, it would be cold, but it would be, you know, gray, it would be drizzling. And I think that really sucks your soul. But for me, even the winters, and actually, to be honest, the winters in Florida are my favorite part of the year because you can actually wear jeans and a hoodie and not sweat to death.
That's true. Because whenever I step outside, I'm sweating before I even go on a walk. I'm just already just drenched in sweat. So yeah, I would have to agree with that. That's a good point.
All right. Well, let's start at the very beginning of your timeline. So tell me where you were born and tell me a little bit about your family dynamic, what your parents did, how many siblings.
Okay. So I was born in a small city called Fredericksburg, Virginia. So it's about 45 minutes south of DC. So everyone knows what DC is. So I just usually say it's 45 minutes south. It's this cute little downtown. I grew up in a relatively great household. I was very lucky in the fact that just my mom worked at a bank. She was a wholesale, well, she still is. She's a wholesale representative. And then my dad was a principal at a local high school. So it was a very stable, loving family. I also have one sibling who is currently overseas. He's deployed and he's in the Marine Corps. So it's just me, my brother, my mom, and my dad in a small little town in Virginia.
I was just watching a documentary about a infamous bank robber. I think it was in California, if I got that right. Anyway, and they interviewed some of the tellers, and they'd been robbed like numerous times, not just by the same person. Did your mom ever have any interaction with robberies?
It's so funny you say that. So she told me a story whenever I was young and I was at a little mini land. It was a daycare. So my mom had to send my dad to go pick me up because somebody, the cops were tracking somebody that was trying to get my mom to kidnap her to open the safe at the bank. So it was a whole crazy thing. So yeah, they were trying to kidnap me. They were trying to get my dad, my mom. So it was, thankfully the cops were tracking it, but yes, that definitely happened when I was younger. It was wild.
That's terrifying. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Terrifying.
It was probably terrifying for my parents because I was so young. I don't remember how old I was. I was probably like 4, like very young. My brother wasn't even here yet.
I'm curious. I mean, it should be a good question to ask her if they've seen a downward trend as we've relied more and more on debit cards, if the banks just don't even hold as much money as they used to anymore, and if it's even worth robbing, you know, over and above just a few hundred bucks.
Right. That's so true. No, that'd be a good question to ask her. I'll definitely ask her after this. Now I'm interested.
All right. Well, we're obviously going to talk about strength and conditioning. When you were young, what were you playing and doing as far as sports and exercise?
Okay, so I'm definitely a strength coach who did not do the typical started soccer when they were young type sort of thing. So I danced my whole life. So I was a competitive dancer my whole life. I did ballet, tap, jazz, musical theater, lyrical, any type of dance, I was in it from when I was little all the way up until high school. But I also did track and field. I was very into running at the time. Well, I still am. I did track and field in high school and in middle school. And in high school, I primarily did the 800 meter, which in my opinion is like the worst race. I don't know why I did the 800 meter run. But I also did pole vault. So I took my dancing skills over to pole vault, and that translated really well.
I'm always curious when I talk to either people that were young athletes or coaches about the arguably gray area between forging performance through children and being cognizant of their longevity and their health. You know, and sometimes I think, you know, schools and colleges win awards at the expense of some of their kids. With you having arguably a pretty diverse sporting skill set, when you reflect now, were there any kind of detriments from that, or did that diversity actually forge longevity and resilience physically?
I think when I think about it, I think it did develop resilience within myself. I feel like having those different types of dance styles are very diverse, different personalities within the teachers, within the students. You really had to be able to shift yourself multiple times. So I do think that did develop my resilience as an athlete, but also as like a professional for sure throughout my career.
And mentally that changed because, you know, if I think of like, you know, contemporary dance versus tap, very, very different. Did that keep it interesting for you? Because I feel, again, if you're just that single sport athlete and a youth athlete, so many of them you hear that emotionally, you know, mentally, they just get completely burnt out on that one sport.
Oh, right. No, I agree. I think if I would have stuck with just ballet, I would have got completely burnt out, even just within any sport. Just all of the needs required for that one sport to be absolutely perfect at it is going to be very taxing on the body and the mind specifically. So I think just having the opportunity to be creative in all those different ways allowed me to have like that mental clarity, in other words.
Did you ever do the kind of really, what's the right word, unorthodox kind of interpretive dance element?
No, I never did that. No, that is interesting though. But no, I never did that. I don't think I could.
I went to drama school for a year. And I remember hip hop class was kind of fun, but we had to do that. And it was my friends that got the top wards, and they were just basically taking the piss. And the person was like, oh my God, that was inspired. So I'll never forget that, because I felt like such a knob trying to be this kind of open-minded interpretive dancer. And, you know, I had nothing to lean into whatsoever. So that right. was probably one of the most painful experiences I've ever had in the dance world.
Oh, that's amazing. I honestly can't even picture you doing that.
I wish I had it on video.
Well, in our hip hop class, we would have to make like very serious faces. And I am definitely not somebody that can keep a serious face like that and just look mad when I'm going through the motions. So that was definitely a difficult realm for me, the hip hop was.
Yeah, yeah. I love the movement of hip hop, though. I think contemporary dance is my favorite, though, in that show. Mm-hmm. I think it's So You Think You Can Dance. It yeah. was always those, especially the couple ones that were the most powerful.
Want to hear something really funny? So actually, for Christmas, I got a pair of tap shoes because I really want to start tap dancing again, like once a week at a local studio. Because I danced my whole life and I was like, oh, might as well just try it. So that
brilliant.
Was
yeah, I just started playing football again, soccer. So I'm actually playing tonight. Oh, right. And same thing. Right. I wasn't like competitive when I was younger. I got into the martial arts, but
okay.
It's just so much fun. It's just, you know, the one game I play is with guys are from Latin America, from the Middle East. It's just a super diverse group. And it's just a bunch of lads that just want to play for fun. There's no, you know, expectations of winning anything. Right. It's just getting together. And it's nice tapping into that, doing a sport simply just for the enjoyment of it.
For sure. And I think as an adult, that's also the joy in it. You have no judgment. I mean, I'm still competitive, don't get me wrong. But you just literally get to do whatever you want. And you don't have to focus on all those other aspects you may have to as a younger athlete.
Absolutely. Well, what about career aspirations? When you were going through the school ages, what were you dreaming of becoming?
So when I was growing up, I always dreamed of becoming a performance dietitian. So I always had this idea in my mind that I wanted to be a dietitian for some big sports team and just be successful with dietetics. Because growing up, my mom just, they ate very well. They cared about their nutrition a lot and taught me a lot about nutrition growing up. And my dad was very involved in sports and coaching and so forth. So I was very involved in just athletics overall and seeing athletics. And I loved the nutrition side of things. Like I was probably the only person, which I don't know why I did this, in high school that would meal prep their lunches, like actually meal prep their lunches. So that was at first my dream.
So how did that then transition into the world of strength and conditioning?
So interestingly enough, I would always go to the weight room with my dad when we had any vacations growing up. He would always lift a lot of weight. So I'd run in there, grab a smaller dumbbell and try and do the same thing he was doing. So I always had this idea of just loving the gym and loving what weights could do for somebody. And even in high school, I remember we had a track and field strength and conditioning class, and I was only female that could squat. I think it was 95. It might have been less. I don't know. But it was a lot. It was the most weight. It was a lot. So that really fired me up. And I feel like those little events kind of started the fire for strength and conditioning, though I didn't know that was a thing. And then when I went to Radford University for undergrad, I went there to major in dietetics. And I actually did not get into the dietetics program, and I would have had to wait another year to restart it. And I was a little impatient. So I was like, what other options are there? So our professor told me, or the advisor, she told me that there was a career called strength and conditioning, or a major in strength and conditioning. And I was like, oh yeah, a major in lifting weights. That's right up my alley. So I honestly didn't know much of what it entailed. Just I knew that I'd be in a gym, and then I then found out it is way more than that. There, it is beyond the weights, in other words. So that's kind of what led me to strength and conditioning. It was just a career, a major change, and I went with it.
What was your experience when you got to the academic portion of strength and conditioning specifically? The reason I asked this, and this is the UK and the US, I did sports science in London for a two-year degree. And then I finished my degree only a few years ago in UF here in Florida. And the takeaway for me, aside from one class at UF, which was basically preparing you for the NSCA CSCS, so that was a very pertinent class. But to me, what it seemed like is it was a very myopic look. So it didn't give me, you know, a set of tools to then go out and start coaching. It was almost like you were then being prepared to be to study a myopic thing in a lab still. So almost like to keep you in that college setting. Mm-hmm. What was your experience of your strength and conditioning academic route?
I would say the same exact thing, to be honest. I felt like it was very much so focused on like the exercise physiology side of things and more focused towards labs and research and less of the application and less of what it's like to even be a coach. I'll be honest, I feel like I got more of my education out of my practical experiences than I did from undergrad, because I mean, a lot of those X's and O's of undergrad I am going to use, but a lot of it is based for research or based for a different career field and not necessarily to become a strength and conditioning coach.
Yeah. I mean, when I look back at what I use to coach now, I did CrossFit since 2006. So an athlete and then ultimately a coach, and then studied some strong first stuff and some strong fit stuff and, you know, foundation training. And it was all that cumulatively that really, you know, factored into the coaching. And it's sad, but I mean, if I'm being blatantly honest, the only real benefit I get from having a degree is when people are like, well, who the hell is this James Gearing guy? Oh, he's got a degree in X Phys. Okay. But really, that doesn't reflect the experience. The experience comes from trial and error and injuries and, you know, seeing what works in my sport, seeing what doesn't. You know, that long kind of, and I've just always been a weekend warrior. I haven't been a full-time coach either, but it would be interesting to see that. And maybe it's starting to now, but that morph into actually giving a young potential coach the tools, like you said, even the interpersonal tools to actually understand programming, understand, you know, how to program for individuals and size and, you know, time of the month, if it's a female, you know, all these different nuances that you need to actually learn as a good coach.
Right. And I think it is up and coming. I am starting to see more programs like even just have a second degree, just anything that they can do to better their skills for practical application. So I am starting to see that turn. I think the growth is coming for sure. But when I went through, definitely not a lot of it, a lot of being told. I actually, one of my internship experiences, which really I feel like just grew myself as a coach. I don't know why. But I was told I really needed to speak up or I would have to leave because I didn't know what to do. I wasn't prepared in undergrad to go coach. I didn't know I'd have to like truly step out there and like project my voice. In other words, I didn't know that. So yeah, it was definitely a lot of learning experiences.
When you reflect back now with this mature coach lens that you have, we've seen the world of strength and conditioning really evolve over, I mean, literally 30 years, if that, especially with CrossFit, with, you know, the Spartan and Tough Mudders and all these things that have changed the way that we look at exercise and functionality. What were some of the elements that they were doing really well early on? And when, were there any, mistakes, any things that if you did it today, you definitely wouldn't do that way anymore?
I think, again, when it comes to the practical side of things, I think my undergrad did very well with having that in-person practical application to be able to coach each other a little bit. I mean, we had it sprinkled in here and there for one or two classes, but I think we did spend a lot of time diving too deep into performance nutrition in a bit. I felt like it was made more so for someone becoming a dietitian rather than like covering the basics, going a little bit deeper than that, but not into like calculations and things I'm probably not going to be doing as a strength and conditioning coach. I think those are two primary things off the top of my head that I can remember. It feels like forever ago, but it really wasn't.
What about the actual programming? So you're out there, you know, working in the gyms now with some of these early coaches, again, not blaming, you know, an individual, because we have evolved so much in the strength and conditioning world and the way we think and even the movements and the utensils that we use now. But what was the good and what was the bad when you reflect on those early years in the gym room?
Got it. So I would say The bad was I felt like we were taught to have to program a specific way for that specific sport. They need those specific needs. It's basically, like I said, those X's and O's. This is what they need. And we weren't allowed to really give variety or explore things a little bit deeper. And I feel like now strength and conditioning can be whatever you want. And there's no right or wrong way. It's really whatever the coach has in store that makes those athletes or those soldiers become successful in the end. So I think going from we need to be doing this, it has to be in this order, to being more creative within our programming and our training.
So speaking of the military, how did you find yourself working with the martial arts program of the Marines?
Yes. So I did 3 collegiate internships. I wanted to go the collegiate route. I had a GA position in line, and I found out there was a position near my house, meaning I could stay at home, save money. I was just out of undergrad, and I took that position as a fitness specialist at Marine Corps Base Quantico. So that was really my first step. Honestly, all I knew about the position was I'd be working with Marines. And at that time, I was like, that is the coolest thing. Like, I didn't even know they had strength coaches. That's one thing. I never knew that in undergrad that there were tactical strength and conditioning coaches, which is crazy because, I mean, someone has to train them. So that's kind of how I got into the tactical space. In my time at the Martial Arts Center of Excellence and with the FFI program, I actually was there for some of my internship whenever I was getting my master's degree. So I would work half of the day at my actual job at Marine Corps Base Quantico as a fitness specialist. And the second half of the day, I felt like was really when I got to dive deep into the Marine Corps and all it has in store with human performance and go work alongside the FFI program.
So what was the FFI program?
So that was the Force Fitness Instructor Program. So basically what it is obviously ever growing. So it's a lot grown now from when I was there, but basically they're creating a curriculum that provides a holistic approach to human performance, specifically within the Marine Corps, to prepare these Force Fitness Instructors to be able to go out to the fleet and serve as that subject matter expert for their Marines. So basically they're leading PT programs, just giving guidance on any topic related to human performance.
So what were some of the principles that they were trying to infuse? Because we get kind of lost in the, you know, the intricacies of programming and that kind of thing. But overall, to prepare a young man or woman to be, an elite Marine, what were some of the principles that they were trying to put as far as you know, nutrition and the physical training side that maybe have evolved from the old, you know, let's do 1,000 push-ups and pull-ups of yesteryear?
I think trying to get them away from just simply running, we got to do more than running to prepare our bodies, but primarily focusing on our warm up and our recovery. I mean, that was probably when I was there, our main focus is to teach them how to properly warm up and create a dynamic warm up that will not take up a lot of time, but will be effective, but also diving into recovery needs as well. So whether that is our sleep that dives into recovery, our water intake, what meal we're having afterwards, if that is our MRE, and even the mobility and other movements as well for that recovery. So those were probably the main hitters for that, but also diving into our nutrition needs and how we can best fuel our bodies throughout the day, whether we're in the field or whether it's just a day-to-day on and off duty situation.
What were they teaching about sleep? Bearing in mind that, you know, my population at the moment is working crazy hours and then we're understaffed, so they're working even more crazy hours. And sleep is the, you know, herd of elephants in the room, as I say. It's just, you know, people turn their head away from the fact that, you know, we just don't get any. And then we wonder why our men and women are falling apart physically and mentally. So how were they putting that to these young Marines as far as the importance of it?
Oof, that was definitely a while ago, I will say. But if I relate it back to my most recent experience with Marine Corps in our curriculum with teaching sleep habits, we not only were teaching different habits to better our sleep quality, but we got to be realistic. Sometimes we really can't get in the sleep that we need, but it is about having that quality sleep. So giving them those tips and even diving into the different factors that will negatively affect our sleep. So it's going to stem from somewhere. Sleep just isn't terrible. It's going to stem from some type of daily habit, lifestyle habit. So really looking at those before we dive into that sleep was very effective for our Marines.
So talk to me then about the Wounded Warrior Battalion and what you did with them.
Yes. So the Wounded Warrior Battalion, that was probably, it was a short experience. It was 11 months, but that was one of the most beneficial experiences I've had because that battalion is unlike any other. We have Marines and sailors that are combat and non-combat wounded. We have different types of illnesses, diseases, you name it, everybody's there to recover and better themselves to either go back to duty or sadly have to go back home just due to any other injury or something it may be. When I was there, I worked primarily with Marines and sailors who are just trying to better their experience before they go back to duty. So we did that through different programs, whether it is road cycling, whether it is specifically strength and conditioning, whether it's swimming or archery, shooting, all of these programs were developed just to better their recovery process. So when I was there, I primarily was with the cycling program. So I would go out, I don't know how my legs did it, but I would go out and do road biking with the Marines and sailors, as well as do strength and conditioning programs in addition.
What about the mental health side of that? Because I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people that, you know, felt that they were taken from their tribe, maybe their identity's being threatened, maybe they already realize that they're not going to be able to go back to their core. So we've got the physical kind of rehabilitation journey. What about the mental side?
So depending on the severity of that, they could be going somewhere else for further help and assistance. But when it comes to the Marines and sailors I was working with that I knew were also struggling with whatever it may be, I think the power of just conversations were very helpful for them, just reassuring them that they are where they need to be. This is just part of the process. They are going to be back to full duty, or they do have a great future in line for after they're off duty, whatever it may be. I think just having powerful conversations with them to remind them of their why was very beneficial when it came to the mental health side of things. Granted, the severity is going to be different for everybody, but with the ones I was chatting with, that is basically how I would attack it. Just simply have a conversation and just show them they're wanted.
Absolutely. Well, kind of going on the other side of the coin, the Army PFT, I think I've got that right, I know changed a couple of years ago, I think it was, and they put in a lot more kind of functional movements. Has the Marine Corps adopted that or a version of that?
No. So the Marine Corps still has the same exact standards for their physical fitness test as well as their combat fitness test. So the needs of the physical fitness test and the combat fitness test for the Marine Corps does translate very well to their day-to-day. I think the Army did do a really good job of really creating a dynamic physical fitness test, and I'm sure that is in the future of the Marine Corps. I'm just not positive on that one.
So what were they seeing as far as the ability of these young recruits? We in the first responder profession are at a recruitment crisis at the moment. It's not, I think it's far less about the ability of our young people, even though that pool is undoubtedly shrinking, and more about the fact that we haven't changed the horrendous working conditions. And until we fix our profession, young people just aren't going to be excited to be firefighters and cops. It's that simple. But I do know, I mean, obviously we just look at the increasing ascending line that is our obesity crisis. And then you look at the inactivity that, you know, you don't have to be a mathematician to figure out that the number of people that are even able to pass military standards is getting less and less and less. So what were you seeing as far as, you know, the ability of these recruits? And then what's the discussion of trying to turn that around so that we can get more young people fit again?
So a big thing I saw is whenever I was working with a body composition program, so Marines and sailors that were put on a body composition program because they were out of line, they simply just didn't know what they didn't know. They didn't know they needed this much protein. They had no idea they needed this much water. So I think just the power of simply educating them was all that they really needed. And that really shifted those gears. Not saying that we'll do it for everybody, but I think just educating them from the start will be very beneficial long term, so that they won't end up on any program such as body composition program, because they have the tools in the toolbox to be successful over time. So simply, they just don't know what they don't know.
Has the Marine Corps seen a kind of decline, though, in the number of recruits and or the physical ability of them?
I would say that yes. I feel that the Marine Corps is seeing a higher level of obesity, and those rates are going up, which is causing a little bit of that decline in recruits. I don't think that's the primary reason for it, but it definitely is part of that pot for sure.
And then what about the functional strength and conditioning principles again? In the fire service, you know, I did CrossFit for a long time, since 06. And then we've actually transitioned to a thing called Wolf Brigade, which is their program is an offshoot of CrossFit, but it's more maces, single arm, kettlebells. And then I've always done the strongman, the strong fit programming as well, which is sandbags and sleds. And I found that extremely functional as a firefighter specifically, or a police officer. What has been the metamorphosis and what are the principles now as far as the tools that you're using to train these young Marines or sustain these older Marines?
Right. So I think it, depending on where these Marines are and what they have available, is going to be key. But a lot of times they're not going to have that amazing human performance facility. So when it comes to their needs, it's going to be using their pack. It's going to be using their ammo cans, their water jugs. It's going to be using anything they have to be able to create those functional tight movements and build those basics to better their physical fitness.
Did you ever use BeaverFit equipment?
Yes, I have.
Because that's another thing that, I mean, there are some legitimate reasons why some fire stations don't have gyms, and it's just space and the age of the building and those kind of things. And I would love to see BeaverFit be the go-to brand for strength and conditioning, because as you know, many people have told me on here, you know, there's BeaverFit equipment sitting on battleships. There's BeaverFit dropped into Afghanistan and Iraq, and they're working out in the desert. So if you go to Miami Beach, there's two of them, you know, they're in the beach and the sand and the ocean there. So I think that really solves the issue with not being able to leave gear outside versus the beautiful Sorinex gear, for example, that's built primarily for the college gyms.
Right. And I think especially within the Marine Corps, even in all the other forces, those types of Connex boxes that are small, don't take up a lot of space, have all of that equipment stored in them, are going to be absolute key for all of these units going forward, without a doubt. I'm a big fan of those. And they're amazing company. I love them.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's go to the transition to team builder then. What made you kind of step away from the gym room and go into the programming app space instead?
Oh, man. Big step, let's say. It was a big leap of faith, I will say. I was on the floor strength and conditioning for 6 years. That's all I knew. We moved to Tampa, Florida, because my husband is in the Marine Corps. So he got stationed here in Tampa. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't have a job. I couldn't find one. I actually worked the front desk at a small private facility here in Tampa for a couple months. And then one day I got a call and was like, hey, I know a position and I think you would do absolutely great at it. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to go all in and give all my trust and see what I can accomplish. I've been in this position for roughly 5 months, so still pretty new to it, but I would say the transition has been nothing greater. It's been awesome. Just still being able to make an impact, not only on the Marine Corps, but being able to make an impact on the Army, the Air Force, even the fire departments and law enforcement, government agencies. It's a gigantic learning experience. I will say, going from strictly Marine Corps, that's all I really know. I know a little bit about what each of these different branches are doing. I did not know anything about fire and law enforcement at first. And now I'm just having constant conversations, learning more. It's been a ride. It's been awesome, though. I will say it was hard, but it's been awesome.
So prior to us talking about what Team Builder is bringing to the table, What were some of the challenges or frustrations that you had with, you know, apps, the ability to disseminate programming, you know, up to that point?
Time. I did not have time to be going into Excel and having to create these programs for every individual Marine or sailor I was working with. And transitioning to something that is has everything in one space is just a time saver. And I mean, that's what coaches need. They need to, something quick. They don't have time to sit and program in Excel for hours and hours to give all these programs to all of these soldiers or whoever it may be. So it is absolutely a time saver off the top of my head.
So talk to me about the creation of Team Builder then, and then let's get into all the different facets that they offer.
Yeah, absolutely. So funny story, our two CEOs, they actually played football together in college, and they came up with this idea of Team Builder and being able to provide strength and conditioning coaches with a way to program, do reporting, monitor their athletes like a one-stop shop. So basically what Team Builder is doing is we're not only providing programming for strength and conditioning coaches to be able to give to their athletes, but we're also providing different reporting features, questionnaires, different ways to monitor our athletes' progress, whether it's physical progress, mental progress, having a more, I like to say, a behind the curtain approach and seeing what's actually going on with our athletes.
See, we talked obviously before, and I am incurably optimistic that we're at the beginning of a health revolution in the fire service. It's starting very small here in Florida with some very progressive, courageous departments, and I'm hoping that's going to have a ripple effect across the country. And I think a real, you know, stark red flag of how far from where we need to be we are is if I have conversations with coaches that work with fire departments and nutritionists that work with fire departments, they're not having elite performance conversations. They're having, let's try and stop them dying conversations, which is not human performance. It's hanging on by your fingernails. Mm-hmm. So to be able to do a baseline analysis of all your firefighters, all your cops, all your paramedics, all your dispatchers, and then be able to infuse programming and then be able to track that person. So rather than just some annual doctor's visit, you actually get to keep, you know, see, and when there's some red flags rearing their head, you can maybe get ahead of a shoulder injury or, you know, mm-hmm. Cardiorespiratory issue, whatever the thing is. So I see this as the next step, getting our tactical athletes actually as tactical athletes rather than, which I've witnessed with my own eyes, paying a strength conditioning company to come in, walk you around the fire station three times, and then make you a bowl of oatmeal. True story. So wow. I think this is a phenomenal platform, especially when you do have progressive departments that actually have hired strength and conditioning coaches, or a network of departments that are using one central one, the ability then to disseminate individualized programming to all these people with the wearables and the tracking. So just as a kind of preamble there, this is where I see there's so much value to Team Builder. So let's start at the very beginning. What if you have a department and they want to do a baseline analysis on their people, what are the tools that you have for that, that we can then carry on tracking over the years?
Right. So whenever they have Team Builder, they have the ability to build assessments. And when it comes to building the assessments or really any of our reporting, it's going to be very customizable. So whatever that department needs or wants to look at, whether that is body weight, whether it is, body weight standards, or if they have any specific testing measures, they can use that assessment as that first step. And then they can also look back at that when they complete that assessment again and again. And then they can also view it as a whole and see those results over time and be able to target those specific firefighters that may need more work in that one specific area and so forth. So that would be that first step, is doing those assessments. Or another option we have is we also have customizable questionnaires. So being able to gather that subjective data, whether that is a readiness questionnaire. So maybe some questions that are from the dietitian, if there is a dietitian involved, or if there's a cognitive specialist involved, or any other leadership that may want to add some sort of question in there for their needs, you can add whatever you want. That's the best part about it. I can ask my firefighters or service members whatever I want and gather that data and then reevaluate over time.
So talk to me about the interaction with wearables.
Yes. So our platform, we integrate with multiple wearables. So whether that is the Oura Ring, Whoop bands, or Garmin watches, or even Apple watches, we're able to use our wearable dashboard and integrate with those depending on what you have. And we can track that load monitoring and the data over time.
Because in many conversations on here, the sleep data, if people really dive in, is extremely unreliable. It's almost fictional. Right. But the HRV and some of those ones are extremely powerful. And I think especially you've got a firefighter that had just got murdered in a 24-hour shift. You know, the HRV is a good indication that maybe that's not the morning to do Murph in your gear. You know, okay, yeah. My HRV is zero. So, you know, I need to just go and chill and go for a walk, walk the dog, you know, go for a swim, whatever it is, but not hit some red line workout. So as that kind of ongoing flow, if you're able to tap in even shift by shift, it can give you a kind of indication of the intensity. You can still do the same programming, but do it at 50% rather than 100%.
Right. And we're able to see if they're well rested. Are they not well rested at all? Are they very high level of fatigue? Is their exertion level extremely elevated? We could track those factors over time through our wearable devices and create a dashboard that we can just quickly print down and give to leadership or whoever may need that.
So you mentioned dietitian. So talk to me about the nutritional element. How is that kind of infused?
Yeah. So when it comes to nutrition, we do not have anything specific like MyFitnessPal or a macro tracker within here, but we do have an area within our programming to where you can add a link to go directly to that application if that's something that dietitian wants. But another way we can use our application for the nutrition side of things can be through the questionnaire. So asking how much water did you have today? Did you eat a meal prior to training? What meal did you eat prior to training? Anything and everything the dietitian can ask. We can even insert educational documents on any type of nutrition strategies, or even if we want to insert a video for our firefighters or our service members to go watch prior to training, maybe during a recovery session, we can do that as well through our programming.
Beautiful. Yeah. My wife uses, I think it's My Fitness Tracker for her daily intake. And, you know, it's pretty impressive. She says, oh, I've had too much sugar today, or I've got to drink more water.
Yeah.
So it's pretty
I
good.
I use that as well.
Well, then now let's shift to your, whoever it is programming for your fire department. Talk to me about the kind of the usability factor of the coach programming or inputting programming for the people in the uniform that they serve.
Yep. So when it comes to, we're going to start from the beginning. When it comes to a fire department getting our service, they can add as many coaches, as many individuals as they want. So there's an unlimited amount of coaches for our application. So whether you want leadership, anyone higher up to be able to view certain reporting features or any type of data, they can do that. We can add them to that. The next thing that is super easy for them to do, depending on what plan you have, is we have a giant exercise library that we have already created. So that is an option. It kind of gives them, it takes that away from them because that is a time. It does take time to be able to develop a full exercise library. So the ability to have that already and then being able to adjust that as they need and even insert their own videos or own exercises, they can do that as well. So really when it comes to building that program out, we have different categories that make it very easy for programming. They're all color coded, whether it is a speed, agility, and quickness movement, whether it is an actual resistance training lift, your warm up, cool down, questionnaire, your notes section, any additional videos, all of that is easily labeled and you're able to then add it to that program. So it's very color coordinated, easy for our coaches to do in the fire department to be able to create and give out that program. Another awesome feature within that is going to be that if we want to make individual adjustments to maybe one firefighter's program because they might have lower back issues, I can go in there, the coach, and I can adjust and add some movement prep just to his program, and it won't affect anybody else's program. So that is one of the awesome features as well. We can divide up the programs into groups. We can assign them to different groups based on whatever category that may be. There is a variety of ways within Team Builder that we can customize this and make it easy for the coaches to be able to give the programs to their firefighters.
Now back to the firefighter, they're following the programming. Are they having the ability to input how they did their, you know, their one, not that you should ever do a run one rep max, in my opinion. I'm a big fan of three rep maxes now, but, you know, so that you're able to start incrementally loading and create that strength journey, that programming for yourself.
Absolutely. So whenever the firefighters have their application, they'll be able to input whether it's the weight, whether it's the percentage, maybe they went a little higher than they were supposed to, or whatever it may be, they can enter in and change anything within there. They can add notes to the application, that specific exercise. They can even keep that notes, that journal, as a way for them to keep track of different notes they took during that exercise over time. Another really cool feature that I think is awesome is that there's an opt-out feature. So let's say that firefighter doesn't have this equipment available. They can opt out and say they don't have equipment available, and then they can choose from a list to what is also just like that exercise, so targeting the same movement patterns, and then do that as well. Or if they have injury, they can say, hey, my lower back is killing me today. I'm going to opt out. And the best part about it is all of those notes and those opt-out options are going to compile into a report so that the coach can see, hey, this firefighter has opted out of the back squat week after week. Let me see why. And then they'll be able to see their notes. So that's an awesome feature.
I don't know, this would just be the same feature, but you've got a firefighter, they had knee surgery, for example, they've got physical therapy prescription. Can that be infused into the app?
Absolutely. So let's say they have, we're going to make up a case study right now together. So let's say they're working with the physical therapist at the beginning of the day, but then they also have, not that I recommend this, a strength and conditioning program later in the day. We're just going to make that up. We can separate those sessions with a session break and enter in all of those physical therapy movements at the beginning of the day. We can just insert those easily like we would any other exercise, and then they'll know the session is split and they have something later in the day. So yeah, you can collaborate with many practitioners to really develop a comprehensive program in one place.
I did that, by the way. I did physical therapy
really?
In the morning. Yeah, when I was my knees and my back injury. Well, you got to get it done. Movement is medicine.
That's true. Okay, you got me there.
Well, I've also, the real world thing is that a lot of guys and girls that go to physical therapy, certainly here in Ocala, when you go to the physical therapy place, you're surrounded by 70-80-year-olds that just had hip surgery.
Right.
So a lot of times they're underselling what you need to be able to do. So when you realize that the very first call as a firefighter might be a 20-story climb with 100 pounds of gear on your back, you have to hit a bar on day one that most people don't even think about. You know, the desk jobs, they don't have to do that. So, you know, you have your PT, but arguably you need to be rebuilding all the other areas. And you start with a PVC pipe, you know, and then you work your way up. But for me, I was offered workman's comp, you know, the light duty where you go in, you just shuffle papers and sit around. And I looked at it the complete opposite. Like, no, I have a full-time job of getting myself rehab. So I do my chiropractic, I do my physical therapy, and then I'm incrementally loading in the gym as well. So that was kind of my ethos.
That's so interesting how the environment for the physical therapy center, for instance, could play a part into maybe the non 70-80-year-olds with a hip replacement. Like that's crazy that it can kind of translate like that to you.
Yeah. Yeah. If you think about, just compare the first responder profession where you're really at the mercy of wherever is available to you in your town versus, I think it's the Thor 3 program that the Army has, I think specifically Special Forces. I mean, night and day, they're working their men and women up to be able to go back in as a Green Beret. And that's really how we should be looking at it in the first responder profession. But as I mentioned before, we're so far from the human performance element, most of us. You have incredible athletes within the fire department, but more often than not, it's not because of the environment, it's despite the environment.
Right. No, absolutely.
All right, so we've got that now. Let's talk about tracking over time. So, you know, you've got these wearables, you've got this baseline when you first hired them. What's the ability of seeing trends, whether it's strength and conditioning, body composition, you know, the other things that you can track?
So when it comes to tracking, we're going to have multiple types of reporting. So again, whether I want to go ahead and track that one questionnaire question. So if I want to just simply just track how much water those firefighters are having as a whole, or maybe one individually, I can go into our reporting feature and click that questionnaire report and track that one question over time. And I could also go in and track an entire questionnaire over time. But let's say, going back to those maxes, if I want to go in and track those trends over time, I can do that as well through our max, our one rep max reporting as well. Or if I want to track the assessments, we can do that. We have a wide variety of reporting. I can go on a list right now for you, but a big thing, a big reporting feature that we have is going to be that completion report. Or are they truly getting through all of their training sessions? That's going to be a big one.
Well, while we were talking, another thing that hit me, when we do fix what's broken in the fire service, and the work week is a huge one. I don't know if your area has a 42-hour work week in the fire service, but most of the country is 56 and then 80 hours when we get forced to stay another 24. So when it does turn around, the next step, really, one of the big steps is to put an actual fitness standard, because people don't realize that almost zero fire departments in the country have a punitive fitness standard. Like, you have to maintain this or you go to light duty or fire prevention until you can get yourself back, or if you choose not to. There will be an on-ramp process. Of course, you're not going to announce it and say, if you don't pass tomorrow, then you're fired. You're going to have, you know, a 1 year, 18 month, whatever it is, on-ramp. So in that example, again, you'd have the ability to kind of reverse engineer programming to prepare people for an event that would be ultimately an annual fitness test.
Right. So if I have a group of firefighters and I have a few that are on the edge of being on those programs, I can assign them specifically to a more so reconditioning program and insert that assessment in there to be able to reassess and see if they're ready to go. Or if I want to make anything specific to them when it comes to questionnaires, I can do that as well. So we can separate our groups and easily be able to monitor those different groups of firefighters.
So we talked about the physical element. We talked about the nutritional element. Before we hit record, you mentioned spiritual and cognitive. So talk to me about the other kind of veins of this.
Yes. So when I think of this, I have to bring this up. But whenever I think of all of these different parts of performance, I almost go to the rope analogy. Because if one strand is hanging, it's not going to be as strong for us to be resilient. So I think having an application where we can keep those strands, I'm not going to say they're going to be perfect, they're not, keep them as tight as we can, that's what we're going to do. So when it comes to the spiritual element, depending on whatever the branch is or the service is, whether it is the fire department or so forth, if they have a chaplain, I think being able to collaborate with them to develop any type of spirituality questionnaires. But when I say spirituality, especially with my experience in the Marine Corps, the first thing we go to is we go to religion. So it's going to be separating those and really diving into, what is my purpose? What is my why? Why am I doing what I'm doing, kind of thing? What are my core values? So diving into those, and we can really incorporate different discussion questions within Team Builder through the programming to be able to just start the conversation, really. That's all we can do when it comes to spiritual, is start the conversation, get it going, honestly, use it as a self-reflection. So when it comes to that spiritual domain, I'm thinking of inserting questionnaires that are self-reflections. All right, I'm having a bad week. This questionnaire is really reminding me of my why. This is my why. This is spiritual fitness. This is the spiritual domain.
That's an important point, because a lot of us enter this profession with this burning desire to serve. But if you listen to a lot of firehouse conversations 10, 15 years in, it shifts to drop, you know, which is part of the retirement. It's just a retirement. It's supposed to, you know, healthcare benefits and all these things. And it kind of gets away from that purpose. And so then, you know, let's say you're not getting well supported by your department, there becomes a lot of almost animosity. So being able to tap into, well, why did I put the uniform on in the first place? And either that fires you up again, or maybe it even sows a seed of, well, maybe I should go and do something else now. Maybe right. I have come to the end of my organic road in this uniform. And this is what's so interesting is if you meet a Marine that served for 8 years, you'd be like, oh, wow, thank you for your service. You meet a firefighter or a police officer that served for 8 years, you'd be like, why'd you quit? What's wrong with you? Mm. It's a completely different mentality. But to me, that number of how many years we should stay is dictated by a pension company, not by that burning desire. So I think that that's a really important point, is tapping into your why. And if you're still, you know, extremely proud and fired up to serve, then you keep serving. But if you've always thought about doing that board shaping company or that personal training company, maybe, just maybe, this is your sign to be like, you know what? My time at home is more important than my pension. I think I'm going to turn the corner. And that is a beautiful thing too, because you paid your dues and then it frees up an opportunity for another young person to come in and you know, fulfill their dream. So I think that's amazing. Yeah, really just kind of being able to tap in and remind yourself of your true why. And if you're far from it and you realize it's from external circumstances like the work week, then maybe you get fired up and you start fighting for your time, you know, to recover. Like you said, in the Marine Corps, that was a big focus.
Right.
It's completely disregarded in the fire service. So if you still love doing the job, then fight for the environment that allows you to thrive.
Right. And being able to insert those type of questions, even if they just, in my head, even if I'm like, I don't need to know that, I don't care about my purpose type thing. I mean, just seeing it, it's going to be in their head. They're going to think about it at some point. And just being able to do that is all I need. So.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned cognitive as well. Is that a different vein?
Right. So when it comes to cognitive performance, so that's going to be another domain that is upcoming within not just the military, but just overall within all of the services. So with cognitive, a lot of times we can collaborate with the cognitive specialist, if that is available. I know that's not available everywhere, that's for sure. But inserting different cognitive testing directly into Team Builder by doing that separation within the programming, or even having after action reports inserted after cognitive training to really dial in back on the performance. And again, going back to those questionnaires, asking any type of cognitive related questions, that would be more so with a cognitive health specialist, but just showing that we can collaborate, not just with strength and conditioning coaches, but with all other practitioners to truly get that behind the scenes approach.
So there's an ability to assess a cognitive level. So for example, you'd be able to see after 48 hours without sleep, you know, I mean, because I mean, it's common sense. Obviously, we need to have rest and recovery. But the really, I guess the most value would be tracking before a department makes a shift, which Gainesville has done, and then tracking after, but seeing just how far from cognitively perfect we are after 24 or 48 hours without sleep. Because a lot of departments are moving to a 48-hour, two-day without sleep, which is pure insanity. But be able to show the decline in cognitive ability, I think would be a powerful data that maybe would turn that around and be like, all right, time out. Maybe we need to give them 24/72, more time off in between, because this is borderline insanity and people are going to get hurt or killed.
Right. Or even like you said, inserting the cognitive assessment, even something very small prior to that long shift, and not saying they have the time to complete it after, but if let's say they completed that same exact thing after, or even the next morning, how are they going to perform? I think that right there will give you the answer to why that 48-hour work week is insane.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. Well, are there any more kind of veins that you want to talk about before we address the different kind of programs that you offer?
I think that's it. I think just showcasing that Team Builder is more than just the physical side of things. Yes, we can do programming. We can make your coaches' lives easier by just being able to copy and paste that training week after week. But being able to insert more nutritional focused domains and spiritual well-being and cognitive health, as well as more sleep and sports medicine, like we can do all of it in one place. And I think that is just the power that Team Builder has.
Absolutely. I like the way that rather than individualize everyone, you can do a kind of blanket programming and then start tweaking it. You know, you've got this right. person who's an Uber athlete or this person who, you know, is coming back, like you said, after a back injury, whatever it is. And that way you can then go in and tweak those rather than, you know, have to program 100 different workouts from the beginning.
Yeah, I can't even imagine as a coach. So anything to make the coach's life easier, we will do.
Beautiful. All right. So people listening, you know, they're all different uniform professions. Some might be a fire department with a single station and maybe 10 people working there. Others might be FDNY. So what are the different kind of programs and packages that you offer?
So all the different things we offer plans based off of an athlete count. But when it comes to the athlete count, we can move that around a little bit based on the department's needs. So I would just say overall, when it comes to trying to figure out which plan is best for your department, it's going to just be based off of your needs. We are very customizable when it comes to our approach with our customers. So we will do what it takes to meet your needs. So usually our higher programs are going to consist of 1,000 plus athletes, and our lowest plans are going to consist of 500 and less athletes. So it all depends on that athlete count. But throughout all of our plans, we do have those unlimited coaches. So whether that's other leadership, like I said previously, practitioners, we can add as many as we want to those. And then when it comes to which plan you have, they're going to have different features. So again, the higher we get in the plans, the more reporting, the more features we're going to have within those plans.
And for people listening, where's the best place to go online to learn more about Team Builder?
The best place to go is going to be teambuilder.com. And you can see our pricing and see everything specifically listed out. You can do a demo with us. You can do a demo with me. Whatever you want, we have everything there listed for you.
And spell Team Builder for me just so they don't find themselves at the wrong site.
Oh, you're going to test me. What if I spell it wrong? Just kidding. It's going to be Team Builder. So TEAMBUILDR. So there is no E in Builder. It is that R. I'm so proud of myself for spelling that right, James. I did not know I would on the spot.
I just want to make sure that they didn't do the E, because you know how the internet is. One letter wrong and you might find yourself at some right. very bizarre dark website. So
right. No, I totally get it.
All right. Well, I want to go to some closing questions quickly if you've got time.
Yeah, of course.
So the first one I love to ask, is there a book or are there books that you'd love to recommend? It can be related to our discussion today or completely unrelated.
Yes. So this is my favorite book of all time. So it's called The Energy Bus. And it is not, I mean, okay, I could say it can be related to strength and conditioning, because I did have a, okay, it is related because I did have a coach recommend it to me whenever I started one of my internships. She made us read it. So The Energy Bus is basically how to always have a positive attitude no matter the situation. So I not only would take that into my coaching, but I would take that into day-to-day life. Not saying I'm perfect and I can always be positive because I'm human, but just always having a positive outlook and attitude on everything. I think it makes it's a game changer, especially in the coaching world.
Absolutely. What about films or documentaries?
Ooh, that's a good one. I don't think I've ever been asked that. A film or documentary? I'll be honest, I'm not a big documentary girl. Not a big documentary girl, I would say. A film. Does the film have to be related to the field?
Not at all.
You know, I really don't know. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to have to think about that. And then what's going to happen is I'm going to think about that right after the podcast. And I'm going to wish I said it.
No problem at all. All right. The next question. Is there a person that you recommend to come on this podcast as a guest to speak to the first responders, military and associated professions of the world?
Yes, I do. Aaron with Virginia Beach Fire Department, he oversees their human performance. He would be incredible. I would absolutely recommend him to come on the podcast.
Beautiful. Have to make that happen then. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then the last question before we make sure everyone knows where to find you specifically, what do you do to decompress?
What do I do? So I typically go on walks. I'm always going on a walk with my dog. I have a giant long-haired German Shepherd, and I'm so happy he was quiet throughout this whole time. Usually I go on walks or I'll work out. Working out is just where I let everything loose. So that's usually where I am. I'm either walking or I'm working out. I know that's probably the opposite of decompressing for some people, but
it works the same for me. Yeah, mine's that, my German Shepherd's outside my door.
Oh,
so
really? Oh,
that's awesome. I do exactly the same thing. I leave my phone at home and I walk my dog twice a day. So
yes. Usually I'll put on some type of instrumental music when I'm walking, just because my mind will wander if I'm listening to lyrics. So I don't know. It just clears my head. Florida's beautiful. I'm able to walk by the water and just enjoy it, get away from everything for a little bit.
Absolutely. All right. Well, and for people listening, where are the best places to find you specifically online or social media?
So I am big on LinkedIn. So I would go ahead and find me on LinkedIn. You can find all things Team Builder, or even if you just want to talk shop or connect, I'm always opening to just having a conversation. Doesn't have to be about Team Builder. I love meeting new people. So you can find me on LinkedIn as Melissa Mercado.
Brilliant. Well, Melissa, I want to thank you so much. It's been such an interesting conversation. I mean, your journey through strength and conditioning and then finding yourself in the tactical space and then now working with Team Builder. There's so much cross-pollination for the show specifically. So I want to thank you so, so much for being so generous with your time and coming on the Behind the Shield podcast today.
Thank you so much. I am so happy to be here and I really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much, James.